Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 16, Verse 20. Padar nyunam sochasi maika padam. Atmanam ava vrishalar bokshamanam. Aho suradin hrita yagya bhagan. Praja uta sfin maga vatya vashati. Translation, I've lost my three legs and I'm now standing on one only. Are you lamenting for my state of existence? Or are you in great anxiety because henceforward the unlawful meat eaters will exploit you? Or are you in a sorry plight because the demigods are now bereft of their share of sacrificial offerings because no sacrifices are being performed at present? Or are you grieving for living beings because of their sufferings due to famine and drought? Purport. With the progress of the age of Kali, four things, particularly namely the duration of life, mercy, the power of recollection, and moral or religious principles will gradually diminish. Since dharma or the principles of religion would be lost in the proportion of 3 out of 4, the symbolic bull was standing on one leg only. When 3/4 of the population of the total world become irreligious, the situation is converted into hell for the animals. In the age of Kali, godless civilizations will create so many so-called religious societies in which the personality of Godhead will be directly or indirectly defied. And thus, faithless societies of men will make the world uninhabitable for the saner section of people. There are gradations of human beings in terms of proportionate faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The first class faithful men are the Vaishnavas and the Brahmins, then the Kshatriyas, then the Vaishyas, then the Sudras, then the Mlechas, the Yavanas, at last the Chandalas. The degradation of human instinct begins from the Mlechas, and the Chandala state of life is the last word in human degradation. All the above terms mentioned in the Vedic literatures are never meant for any particular community or birth. There are different qualifications of human beings in general. There's no question of birthright or community. One can acquire the respective qualification by one's own efforts, and thus the son of a Vaishnava can become a Mlecha, or the son of a Chandala can become more than a Brahmana, all in terms of their association and intimate relation with the Supreme Lord. The meat eaters are generally called Mlechas, but all meat eaters are not Mlechas. Those who accept meat in terms of scriptural injunctions are not Mlechas, but those who accept meat without restriction are Mlechas. Beef is forbidden in the scriptures, and the bulls and cows are offered special protection by followers of the Vedas, but in the age of Kali, people will exploit the body of the bull and the cow as they like, and thus they will invite sufferings of various types. The people of this age will not perform any sacrifice. The Mlecha population will care very little for the performance of sacrifices, although performance of sacrifice is essential for persons who are materially engaged in sense enjoyment. In the Bhagavad Gita, performance of sacrifices is strongly recommended. The living beings are created by the creator Brahma, and just to maintain the created living being progressively towards the path back to Godhead, the system of performing sacrifice is also created by him. The system is that living beings live on the produce of grains and vegetables, and by eating such foodstuff, they get vital power of the body in the shape of blood and semen, and from blood and semen, one living being is able to create other living beings. But the production of grains, grass, etc. becomes possible by rain, and this rain is made to shower properly by performance of recommended sacrifices. The sacrifices are directed by the rite of the Vedas, rites of the Vedas, namely Sam, Yajur, Riga, and Atharva. In the Manu Smriti, it is recommended that by offerings of sacrifice on the altar of fire, the sun god is pleased. When the sun god is pleased, he properly collects water from the sea, and the sufficient clouds collect on the horizon and rain falls. After sufficient rain falls, there is sufficient production of grains for men and all animals, and thus there is energy in the living beings for progressive activity. The Malechas, however, make plans to install slaughterhouses for killing bulls and cows along with other animals, thinking that they will prosper by increasing the number of factories and live on animal food without caring for the performance of sacrifices and production of grains. But they must know that even for the animals, they must produce grass and vegetables, otherwise the animals cannot live. And produce grass for the animals that require sufficient rains. Therefore, they have to depend ultimately on the mercy of the demigods, like the sun god, Indra, and Chandra. And such demigods must be satisfied by the performances of sacrifice. This material world is a sort of prison house, as we have several times mentioned. The demigods are the servants of the Lord who see to the proper upkeep of the prison house. These demigods want to see that the rebel living entities who want to survive faithlessly are gradually turned towards the supreme power of the Lord. Therefore, the system of offering sacrifice is recommended in the scriptures. The materialistic men want to work hard and enjoy fruit of results for sense enjoyment. Thus, they are committing many types of sins at every step of life. Those, however, who are consciously engaged in the devotional service of the Lord are transcendental to all varieties of sin and virtue. Their activities are free from the contamination of the three modes of material nature. For the devotees, there's no need for performance of prescribed sacrifices, because the very life of the devotee is a symbol of sacrifice. But persons who are engaged in fruitive activities for sense enjoyment must perform the prescribed sacrifices, because that is the only means to get free from the reaction of all sins committed by fruitive workers. Sacrifice is the means for counteracting such accumulated sins. The demigods are pleased when such sacrifices are performed, just as prison officers are satisfied when the prisoners are turned into obedient subjects. Lord Chaitanya, however, has recommended only one yajna or sacrifice called the Sankirtan Yajna, the chanting of Hare Krishna, in which everyone can take part. Thus both devotees and fruitive workers can derive equal benefit from the performance of Sankirtan Yajna. Translation, I've lost my three legs and I'm now standing on one only. Are you lamenting for my state of existence? Or are you in great anxiety because henceforward the unlawful meat eaters will exploit you? Or are you in a sorry plight because the demigods are now bereft of their share of sacrificial offerings because no sacrifices are being performed at present? Or are you grieving for living beings because of their sufferings due to famine and drought? So here we have a series of questions being asked by the bull to the cow to elucidate the problems of the modern world. So the bull is asking the cow why she is suffering and lamenting. And of course the bull already knows. The first sentence here, I have only one leg left. So the cow has four legs and one leg left, that means three are missing. As Prabhupada points out in the purport, that means that three quarters of Dharma are missing in the age of Kali. And there's only one quarter of Dharma left. Which means that there is three quarters of Dharma in the world. So this majority of sinful dharmic activities and very little Dharma left in this world. So that is, of course, one reason for lamenting, because the bull is suffering, therefore the cow must lament, which means the earth must be affected by the lack of Dharma in this material world. Of course, the legs of the cow are also the pillars of Dharma. So we have truthfulness and cleanliness and tapas, austerity, and doya, compassion. These are the principles of Dharma, the main principles of Dharma. Of course, we have many other principles as well, but these have been summarized as four principles of Dharma. And if one can follow these principles, then Dharma is intact somehow or other. Even if we're not following, let's say, particular rules or whatever, and rituals, still, if we can maintain these principles, then we can be said to have Dharma intact. And in Kali Yuga, most of these principles are gone. So we have very little compassion, very little sense control, very little truthfulness, very little mercy, very little cleanliness. And as a result, we have lots of problems in this world. So each of these questions is actually stating a factual condition of Kali Yuga. So the first is the general condition that Dharma is missing. By and large, there's adharma in the world. And this is, of course, related to the other problems. So the second the question here is that the meat eaters will exploit you. It says here, bokshamanam, which actually means not only exploited but eaten. You'll be eaten by the meat eaters. You know, the cow will be eaten by the meat eaters. So that's why you're lamenting, perhaps. So that, of course, is true also. And we find that meat eating becomes more and more prominent in the age of Kali, and particularly even in the last 50 years or so, 100 years. Previously, even meat eaters were not eating so much meat. And it's with this production of industrial production of meat and raising of cattle as an industrial type of endeavor that we get the prominence of meat in this world, not only the cows but the chickens and pigs and whatever, made factory production of meat to satisfy the demand for meat, which is produced by the propaganda produced by the educational system and the health experts, etc., that say you have to eat meat to be healthy. So this is a modern type of information that is given out to everybody in your elementary school. I think they have the little diagrams there. You get protein from this, 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 and this. You get carbohydrates from this, and you get other things from the vegetables like this. So there's a nice diagram there with your meat and your eggs and your fish and your cheese and your milk in it, and that's your proteins. And then you get your grains and your vegetables and your fruit like this. So you got to have this, the protein here, so you have to eat the meat. So that's just the general education given to people. And this has become prominent in the modern world. As I mentioned previously, it was not so prominent. They didn't have this big production of meat, so you couldn't even get meat so much. And probably the first generation of people didn't eat that much meat also. And in Europe, they didn't eat so much meat also. Other countries, they didn't eat so much meat. But now it's very, very prevalent, particularly chickens and pigs and cows. Eating those type of things nowadays, so very, very prevalent. So it's of course, we can see that the result is also very negative on the environment on the earth, as well as on the human being. So very pertinent observation given here. Now, are you in a sorry plight because the demigods are now bereft of their share of sacrificial offerings because no sacrifices are being performed at present? The demigods grieve when they're not given the sacrifices. Nobody's doing sacrifices, so the demigods don't get their share. If they don't get their share of sacrifice, they won't give what they're supposed to supply. So the sun gives sunlight, Indra gives rain. Vayu gives air, proper air. So each of the demigods has a particular department. And if it's not operating properly, then the living entities suffer. And if you don't do the sacrifices, then the demigods will not give, then we suffer on earth. In the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna praises Karma Yoga, he says, therefore you do sacrifice Arjuna and worship the devatas. And in this way, you can be happy on this earth. It's not an ultimate instruction. It's an instruction for people who are attached to sense gratification, as is described by Prabhupada in the purport. It's not the highest principle, but for people that are interested in material comforts, let them worship devatas and get their needs. Now, if they don't do that, they just take everything from Mother Nature without sacrifice, devatas will take everything away ultimately. This is the message we get here. The devatas will be dissatisfied and there will be lack. And this, of course, is again related to the earth. So in the purport, Prabhupada mentions how you do sacrifices, the devatas are satisfied, they give the elements necessary for supporting life, such as rain, air, sunlight, etc. Then the plants grow and the animals eat the plants. The human beings eat the plants, and then we can survive. Okay. Then, when we're surviving, not the animals, but the human beings, they have to do sacrifice. They have to follow the Vedas, which is the word of the Lord, do the sacrifice by which they satisfy the devatas. Then the devatas give more materials so that the food can flourish on the earth. If they don't do that, then the cycle gets interrupted. And less food, or no food. So the human being suffers. But not only does the human being suffer, whole planet suffers. All the plants and animals also suffer because of the act of the human being, negligence. They don't do the sacrifice. So the animals don't do sacrifice, there's no rule that the devatas aren't going to be satisfied and they won't give anything. It's only the human beings. Human beings don't do the sacrifice, they don't get anything. This was not only recognized by the Vedas, but we can say all primitive societies also have this understanding. They want to give something back to the devatas for some reason. You know? They have all these little offerings they're making up to devatas. As not just because of fear or whatever, but out of gratitude also, because they're getting something, therefore they should give something back. And if we don't recognize that, we don't recognize that we're actually taking things, and we only take and we don't give, then we fall into a very materialistic, selfish mentality, and we start exploiting everything. And that's exactly what happens when we don't do the sacrifice. We don't give anything back, we only take. Then we get obsessed with enjoyment in the material world, exploitation for our own benefit. And consequently, we end up with a lot of problems. Yeah. So this takes place on all levels, the personal level, and then the social level, and then the governmental level, whatever, and then the terms of industry, etc. In order to profit, they will do things which are actually unethical in order to make more profit. Things which are common sense, they will break those rules and destroy the earth for their own profit. So very, very unfortunate for the whole earth. So the earth is made in such a way that everything, if the rules are followed properly, things go on peacefully. The more you break the rules, the more problems you get. Okay. So if we have a little problem, I mean a little something is wrong. And if we have great problems, then we know there's a lot of mischief going on in the world. The bigger the problem. So that's just the gauge of the conduct of human society. And thus, we have examples here in the Bhagavatam, particularly this canto, we have the reign of Yudhisthira Maharaj and Parikshit Maharaj. This was ideal leadership, ideal kingdom, ideal following of rules, so therefore everything was peaceful. Minimum of disturbance. Of course, we know that the system of karma yoga and offering sacrifices and worship of devatas, etc., is not a final solution to our problems, because everybody has to die anyway. Everybody is subjected to karma. But at least this system encourages people to avoid the bad activities which will give bad karma. So the majority of the people will live peacefully because they avoid all the bad karmas. They avoid unnecessary exploitation of the earth and the animals and the plants and other human beings. And then they can get good karma and they live nicely on earth. But of course they have to die anyway, and they are subjected to more karma. They can't escape that. So in that sense, it's not a complete solution, but this is the solution for population in general. And through this worship of the devatas, then at least there is some sense of giving on our part, and an idea that we're not the absolute controllers. Why would we, if we are the absolute controllers, why do we have to give anything to devatas at all? We wouldn't have to, but we recognize, yeah, we have to give. So we put ourselves in a lesser position. So that's beneficial for all humanity to understand that our superior powers. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur even goes so far as saying that, don't criticize even these ignorant people in some societies, and they're making offerings to this deity or that spirit in the tree or the river or whatever. At least they got some idea of some superior power that they should respect. Of course, it's not the highest concept. So we get to the devatas described in the Vedic literature. This is a higher concept of material worship. At least it's not concocted. So, and if we do those things properly, we get very good results. So the proper way, the very sophisticated way of showing your gratitude to Mother Nature, so to speak, is you carry out these Vedic sacrifices very nicely, methodically, and then you get very good results. We can do them in a very haphazard way, or just do some semblance of things, and we get a little bit of result. But if we want to do get very good results, then we do the sacrifice exactly with the proper devata, do the proper rituals, and we get proper result. Therefore, in Kali Yuga, what to speak of? Recognition of the Lord, even recognition of the devatas, is much less. And consequently, lack of sense control is much more prominent in this world. Then the last question is, you're grieving for living beings because of their suffering due to famine and drought. No more rain. No more food. So this, of course, is another aspect of the world, which is a direct result of not doing the sacrifices for the devatas, not following the regulative principles, the four pillars of Dharma. This becomes a natural result of that. Earth does not give. This is not a complete list of the misfortune of Kali Yuga, but it gives some of the indications, and the next verses also enlarge upon these and give us more things which are worthy of grief, because it's not the actual nature of the earth to do this, but nevertheless, under situation of grief, then this is what happens to the earth. So this is one level of existence. But as Srila Prabhupada points out in the purport, we have another sacrifice we can do. Sankirtan Yajna. So the other sacrifice, this is the Vedic sacrifices, which the Pandavas were doing and previous great kings were doing are very complicated for individuals to do. And even the more simple sacrifices, they're also a little more too complicated for normal people to do in this age. We know that sacrifice was the general conduct of people in Treta Yuga. But that was over a million years ago when they were doing those sacrifices, and people in general qualified for those sacrifices. And in Dwarpa Yuga, we see at least the leaders were doing these sacrifices, the major sacrifices. In Kali Yuga, the leaders are not doing sacrifices, nor are what to speak of the common people aren't doing any sacrifices. So what to do? We cannot expect the leaders to do anything because this is Kali Yuga. The leaders are not qualified. So, solution is, let's do the other sacrifice, Sankirtan Yagya. This is the solution. Of course, when we say Sankirtan, not only Sankirtan, but Yagya itself means we associate it with fire sacrifices, according to rules and regulations of the Vedas. But in general, it means worship as well. So we call Sankirtan Yagya, we mean worship of the Lord by chanting His name. So any type of worship of the Supreme Lord is beneficial at any time. And of course, all of the different dharmas of the different yugas, from meditation and Satya Yuga, and sacrifices and Dwapara Yuga, and deity worship and Dwapara Yuga, they're all types of bhakti, all types of devotion. So that should be there in every age. So unfortunately, the people cannot do those things in Kali Yuga. So the Lord gives us Sankirtan Yagya. This is the Yuga Dharma. And this is how we do Bhakti Yoga, worship the Lord in Kali Yuga. So this actually surpasses the necessity of worshiping the Devatas. In the Bhagavatam it says, if we worship the Supreme Lord, all the Devatas are satisfied. If the Devatas are satisfied, then they'll give all the products to the earth. Just like if you put food in the stomach, all the senses are satisfied because they get nourishment. If you try to take food, put it in your ear, put all your food in your ear, nothing happens. You hold halava in your hand, but you don't eat it, what happens? Nothing. It has to go to the stomach. All the food goes to the stomach, the stomach distributes the ground. So the Supreme Lord is like the stomach. You give it to the Lord, all the devatas are satisfied. Or as we give water to the root of the tree, the leaves and the branches and the flowers and the fruit are satisfied. So if we offer to the Supreme Lord, this is a shortcut that bypasses the devatas. We don't have to worship many devatas, it's worship one Supreme Lord, and they get all satisfied. So it is not offensive to do that. In fact, the devatas are very pleased by that, and they are satisfied more by that than getting individual offerings. So that is the other principle. But then again, in Kali Yuga, very difficult to worship the Lord also by other methods, by meditation or even by deity worship. So therefore the method is Sankirtan Yagya. We do Sankirtan, chant the name of the Lord. That's sufficient to satisfy Supreme Lord and the Devatas. Difference is that it's easier if everybody can do it. Everyone is qualified. All the human beings are qualified for Sankirtan Yagya. And everybody gets benefit. So that's why it's called the Yuga Dharma. Everybody can do it in Kali Yuga. So this is the other solution to this whole problem, all these circumstances here that we see in all the problems of Kali Yuga that the cow is lamenting. We worship the Supreme Lord through Nam Sankirtan, which means that everybody does it. If we get more and more people doing Sankirtan, chanting the name of the Lord, then devatas are satisfied, Supreme Lord satisfied, there's enough food, enough water, no diseases, all of this minimized. And also, of course, we get less adharma, minimizing animal slaughter, support of the four regulated principles, and we get Satya, Saucha, Tapas, and Doya maintained. All that through Nam Sankirtan Yajna. So that's the solution for Kali Yuga. Everything else is very difficult to do, but at least encourage everybody in this direction. And naturally, all the other ills of Kali Yuga, all the problems of Kali Yuga get solved.
So Maharaj, as you mentioned, the message Simhatan Yajna is recommended, but speaking to perhaps people from a Hindu Indian background, should be somehow or other they can't, not inspired for Sankirtan Yajna, if you're preaching to them about, demigod yajna, etc., something they can understand from the culture. But in the West, it's something a little bit different that, you know, is completely foreign. So is there something like equivalent to that? You could, okay, if you can't chant Hare Krishna, at least do this or that. I mean, it's like
Well, if they can chant the name, well, of course, all religions usually have some sort of chanting process, I think, isn't it? They even chant the 100 names of Allah and the Quran, and then obviously the church has various hymns, etc. But the main thing is, yes, they should do that, and it's good. It's more powerful if they can understand what it's for. It's actually a glorification of the Lord. And by glorifying the Lord and understanding His merciful nature, give up our selfish, our self-centered mentality of exploiting everything. So in that sense, all types of worship of the Supreme Lord in any form, even if it's not kirtan, whatever they do, even if they meditate or think about it, is good for them, definitely.
Yes, I've heard, to when Lord Caitanya was chanting Gopi, Gopi, Gopi in the Caitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada mentions in the purport that this is considered like a punya shloka. It's not the name of Krishna, but it's a pious sound vibration. So I've heard it mentioned that chanting or singing, like Jesus Christ or whatever, you're not really referring to the Supreme Person, but it's on the same level as Punya Shloka, there's still some benefit there. I don't know if that's a proper analogy.
Well, maybe we can say it's like Nama Bas. It's not done with full knowledge, so therefore the actual truth about the Supreme Lord is not the highest concept, so therefore we get less effect. But nevertheless, we see that Nama Bas also gives effect. It's purifying, etc. We don't get prema from it, but at least we you can get all material benefits and up to liberation at least, and that much. So you get some benefit from it in any case.
So the chanting of Hare Krishna is the main understanding to achieve prema, and on this, in relation to this purport, we're talking about jagya and to receive and to benefits, and speak that the rain and the grains.
Yeah.
So is it in fact quality or quantity? At what point, the devotees chanting all over the world at the moment, so is it not enough channel going on for these things, but for these natural gifts to happen, the way they have proper rain and
Well, I suppose it's a matter of quantity. If we get a certain amount of people doing this, then we'll have more effect, yeah? Let's say, who said it, 5%? Or, I don't know, some little percent is there. If we get that many people chanting, then it will have a positive effect. Now, there have been experiments by, I think, the TM people or something. I don't know if they're true or not, whatever, but and other people also. They don't chant, but they meditate. So their idea was, if we get more people meditating at once, then that improves the quality of people in the world or whatever. So they tried to measure crime rates and stuff according to when they're doing their concentrated meditation. I don't know what the results of that were, but that was the idea behind that also. And there's other groups also that do such things, that they you know, try to concentrate on, you know, unconditional love meditation and things like this to bring about a better condition of the world. So definitely it's a good direction to go in, whether it's effective or not, I don't know, but at least more people that get into this idea that we need a different solution to our problems rather than simply adjusting the, you know, stopping this industry from, you know, putting smoke in the thing or whatever. We have a more psychological, our mental change of people, or let's say change of ego ultimately, and the change of consciousness of people, then things will improve on Earth. So the idea behind this, of course, is that the consciousness of the human being affects the Earth planet. And if we have a lot of sinful consciousness, then we get bad results. And the purer it is, the better results. Yeah? So if we can improve the consciousness level, it may not be the highest level, but at least if we go in the right direction of sattva guna at least, you know, that the Earth can improve.
That sounds like the whole man has a spirit of
the town village. Yeah. And of course, if people have other religions, we can just encourage them to chant whatever name they, you know, want, whatever, in their religion also, as Prabhupada also encouraged people. Yajna actually comes from yaj, and yaj is yajanti. Yajanti means to worship. So it's not necessarily, you know, sacrifice in the sense of offering ghee into fire or grains into fire. It can be any form of worship. Yajanti means I can worship the Lord by offering flowers or doing this or whatever. So another type of worship is saying the name of the Lord. It's another type of worship. When we say Sankirtan Yajna, it's worship of the Lord by kirtan, glorifying him by chanting his name. So it doesn't mean sacrifice in the sense of the other meaning of sacrifice is we give something up. I sacrifice my life for this cause, or I sacrifice my life for my country. So we're giving up our life for our country. So that's a different type of meaning of sacrifice. Of course, it means giving also, sacrifice. But in the more positive way, sacrifice means I'm giving grains into the fire. And that type of that's why it's called sacrifice there. We're offering it. In the Bible also we have, I think the first sacrifice was near the beginning of the Bible. Abel and Cain were offering sacrifices. So one offered grains, the other offered meat. All things. Sacrificing into the fire or like that. So in that sense it's giving up something into the fire. But for us that means worship. Yeah? So it's a general term for a type of worship of Devata, or worship of the Supreme Lord.
So in the previous years, meditation and deity worship were also parts of yajnas, would you say?
Yeah. They're all worship, so in that sense they're all yajna.
In terms of the importance of sacrifice, I think you can't answer this as well, but because we're being given something, it's kind of like being given gifts in the material world, like you get something, you feel like you're obliged to give back in some specific level.
Yeah.
So it's supposed to be the same deal with yajnas in terms of the...
Yeah. It's giving back in one sense. So, when we get the food and we get nourished, then we do sacrifice for the devatas. So we give things back. Huh? We please the sun deity or the rain deity or whatever by giving something to them. So it's acknowledgement. Just like I think in what we have Thanksgiving in the Western world, prayer for everything you get to God. So it's like that on a more common, not say regular basis, we do that. Yeah. This, of course, it's a material level in one sense, because we're, you know, give us today our daily bread and all. that's the material level. So higher than that, of course, is we just worship the Lord, not because we want anything, but just that our whole life, in one sense, our jiva, the jiva depends on the Lord. And that's our natural propensity to seek dependence on the Lord. Nitya Krishna Das. So that type of bhakti is the highest, where we don't actually think in terms of food and maintenance, etc. We are, out of great affection, we offer ourselves to the Lord.
In terms of offering ourselves to the Lord, is Tathagata like another symbol of gratitude, because we've been given...
Yeah, in one sense, yeah. Or surrender also, surrender. Atmanivedana is offering oneself to the Lord. Or surrender, Sharanapati again, which has Abhinavedana as one of its parts also, that which is the first Anga of Bhakti, according to Jiva Goswami, is surrender. So it's intrinsic in Bhakti itself. Okay, Hare Krishna.